Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlin Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. So please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. Mondays are split between Hearts of L&P with Victoria and another episode of Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotion tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. Cooking, good looking.
Oh, just the usual.
Same old, huh? Cool. Yeah, you know, I really like your topic for tonight. You know, to be honest, I've never read Raymond Chandler, though I want to. But, you know, I like the quotes that you picked out, and I can imagine, well, you know, I like books that, you know, have some, like, grit and action to them. So that's what I kind of imagine his books to be like. You know, I don't know. Have you ever read Raymond Chandler?
Yes, I have. Plenty.
Okay. Okay, what book of his would you recommend I read first if I was going to dive into one?
Well, that would be easy considering the movie that came out of it would be The Big Sleep, Farewell, My Lovely.
Okay.
Poodle Springs was a good book. What else we got?
I do recognize those titles.
Yeah, The Long Goodbye. They're all, The Big Sleep, that was Bogey and Bacall. Farewell, My Lovely, I think that Robert Mitchum was in that one, I think.
Nice.
Lady in the Lake, I'm not sure. I don't think they've done Poodle Springs as a movie, but that was written not quite finished, so his longtime friend and sometimes parlaying writer, Robert B. Parker, finished that one up. And Parker also writes in that style of Chandler as well.
Okay. Now, did Raymond Chandler die? I don't mean to sound like, I guess I don't, I should know that.
Oh, yeah, he's been dead for quite a while. That book, The Poodle Springs, came out in 1989.
So okay, well, geez, I guess
well,
I...
Well, he's been dead since 59.
Holy smokes, yeah, I should have really done my research and known that. All right. Well, awesome quotes that you picked out. I did pre-read the poetry, and I got to say, we've got a great lineup tonight. So, all right. And I'll check the phones, and so far, it's just us two turkeys. So what do you say? Shall we get this ball rolling?
Yep.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Up first I have Danes Are Dangerous by Kingsley Medland. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Danes Are Dangerous by Kingsley Medland. Feet away, she looked like a lot of class, stunning nylon legs and a fine-looking ass. It was the kind of ass that she wanted to wear as a hat. She came across the bar, all cleavage, legs, and pout. She leaned in close and whispered into my ear so she didn't have to shout. Mickey Burnstone, she whispered, a hot breath on my neck. They stay on the street, but you're the best. That's what I hear. I'm not called Magic Mickey for nothing, doll, I replied. You want a person to vanish, then they disappear. She fixed me with eyes like chips of blue ice. She said, hit me once, you won't do it twice. In my job, you gotta know every angle. I lost sight of that rule because I was watching her high heel dangle. Had I been paying attention, thinking with my head and not my dick, giving the job some thought and not acting so quick, I wouldn't have ended up in a world of shit. Says you gotta go, Mickey. What a numb shit you all playing this twist. He hit me again, hard, with a diamond hard fist. I was gonna pop you quick, bada bing, bada boom, big thug in a small suit said. And I gotta tell you, for old time's sake, that's the God's honest truth. He hit me again. But, he said, picking me up like I was nothing but a bag of last month's laundry, he wants you thrown off the roof. End poem.
Oh, that was awesome. Great read there, Rex. Yeah, I really like this one. You know, it's, first of all, I thought it fit with the theme of the show and the contest so well. It's quite a talent to be able to tell a story in rhyme, because you want to have words that work and that the rhyme doesn't feel forced. And, you know, I like that there's the grittiness in here, but there's that dark humor too. I'm not called Magic Mickey for nothing, doll, I replied. You want a person to vanish, then they disappear. You know, and great all the way through. But a wonderful thought in the, had I been paying attention, thinking with my head and not my dick. And you did a great read of it. I mean, you did a great read all the way through, but the switch from the Magic Mickey speaking to the Hitman speaking in the dialect with Der Boss and, you know, Der, he wants your throne off Der Roof. You know, wonderful use of dialect there. And you're switching from the other read to that, I thought was really smooth. But I like it. I like that he brought the Hitman in with a very distinct, I don't know if he's a Hitman. I kind of get the impression that Mickey's a Hitman. And maybe this other guy is too. But either way, this guy who just is hired to drop Mickey off the roof, I like that he had been brought in with a voice of his own. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. And, I'll walk in that very same vein. Although there was one little tiny thing that didn't fit. And it's not a big deal, but because everything else worked besides that. The bada bing, bada boom is it's anachronism. It's out of place with this 30s, 40s type feel. And he's got everything else right. The
yeah.
Space there on the street, chips of blue ice for the eyes, watching her high heel dangle and not be paying attention. The language for the hitman being the dumb stoop was a nice roll into, and the little touches of humor, picking you up like it was nothing but a bag of last month's laundry is a nice fit as well. Outside of that little bada bing bada boom, everything else is perfect. But even I can overlook that for the thought. It was a nice fit for the moment.
Small detail like that.
Even the sort of Mickey Bumfelt, a nice twist on thought, and a little bit of humor as well as the oddball thought. Yeah, they did actually think on that level and drop in those little hints of sly backhandedness in the day. So they still do it today. So it really does. That's not out of place at all. But it was a nice touch. And what else we got? The thought of hit me once, he won't do it twice. That fits with the role of the dangerous dame off looking for something to be done quickly. And the diamond hard fist, I like that thought. So, nicely done, Kingsley, and thank you very much.
Absolutely. Wasn't Bada Bing, Bada Boom from the Honeymooners?
No, I think the first song I heard was Goodfellas. The Sopranos, Bada Bing Bada Boom.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. All right. Oh, by the way, Laurent has joined us, so welcome, Laurent. Glad you could be here.
Well, thank you. I was trying to take a nap all evening. The body would not cooperate, but at 11:45, for some reason, said, okay, now you can go to sleep.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I kind of understand that, but I had the opposite thing. My body was like, I'm tired, I can relax. And my brain was like, you must think about everything that has ever happened in your life since the time you were five.
The mind just won't turn off sometimes.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, did you get to hear that last piece?
Yeah, old Mickey Bumfelt's going to take a swan dive off a roof, I see. Mickey Bumfelt. It confused me initially when I read it earlier this evening. I thought it was, you know, going to be more about Chandler's character, but his various characters, primarily, of course, the one, Philip Marlowe. So I'm trying to figure it out, and all of a sudden I realized that he wasn't using that at all, just kind of using the accents and the milieu of the, you know, the kind of prose that I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you. Oh, and Pam, Bada Bing, Bada Boom first came into in the 70s. That would be Santino Corleone out of The Godfather.
Ah, okay.
Now, that just proves to me that you may be wrong, because you called it, what did you call it? You called it an anachronism?
Yeah, something out of time, out of place.
I don't know if it was said back in the Godfather. A lot of The Godfather was detailing what was happening early in the century. You know, I mean, you know, they went
okay.
back in
well,
time, in other words. So I don't know when in the movie they said that, but because I had always thought about
if I remember correctly, wasn't Santino Corleone played by? Oh God, what's his name? The guy who played Raging Bull.
Oh yeah.
And played Taxi Driver.
Yeah, that sounds like it would come out of his voice.
Wiktionary says the etymology of bada bing, bada boom, it first appears in the 1958 Pat Cooper movie, The Italian Wedding. But I'm sure we could also discuss the etymology of, you know, bada bing, bada boom for the rest of the show, but that would really cut back on the rest of our poetry. So what do you say, gentlemen? Shall we move forward?
Yep.
All right. Up next we have, She Stared Daggers Through Him by Darkened Auras, and it goes like this. She sat there all night in the corner seat, staring daggers through the man, mingling, flirting, and kissing another girl. So this had been his plan. Is this what he had gone, where he had gone before, when he had said, I'm working late, perusing the bars and searching for a different kind of mate to bait? Her eyes bore in so deeply, he should have felt the laser's heat, melting his skin like candle wax from a darkened corner seat. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Now there's a sharp-bladed woman waiting for something to happen. Laurent, what do you got?
Well, I appreciate the brevity in this, because it's perfect. You know, the 12 lines, she stared daggers through him, and she uses a laser's heat. as a substitute for staring daggers. Either way, it's a rather deadly look, and he's going to pay the price.
Absolutely. And you're right, it didn't need to be any longer because it hints at, but doesn't, or hints at and alludes to what exactly going on and what will be going on sometime later. So it leaves everything open for interpretation. It's nicely done. And Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, it is. I have to agree. It is nicely done. Wonderful rhyme. I like how she tells a story and gives us an image, you know, a snapshot of actually all three characters. Mainly, of course, the girl who's the woman who's doing the glaring from the back of the bus. And I like that she chose a specific scene, you know. Well, did it actually say, oh, no, it's not a bus. Never mind. I don't know why my mind thought it was a bus. Okay, never mind. It's a bar. Well, that's the oddest thing. Okay. But anyways, so, yeah, he gives us a snapshot of, you know, even the bar itself. Like, you can kind of picture it just being dark and smoky. I like that the phrase mingling, flirting, kissing another girl, so this had been his plan, you know, and you can feel the anger, you know, feel the not only the anger, but the how hurt she feels having caught him. And I think the, you know, from a darkened corner seat was a great way to wrap up this brevity, because it just encapsulated the atmosphere that was created. So very well done.
Nicely said. All right. Where would you like to go next?
All right. Up next, we have Emptiness by Ilex Adder. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, ma'am. Emptiness. There's an emptiness within me, kind of hollowness found between two stars, filled with the unimaginable at almost microscopic levels, but ruled by the bleak darkness only space could consume. And no amount of words conjured by my own hands or by the tongue of a wiser fool could possibly supply the galaxy worth of mass required to satisfy the void spinning within my bones as the endless chill brings frost to my marrow, destroying me from within. So I cling to the planets between the chasm, savor the rare fistfuls of peace hanging between an unstoppable abyss and the mind I flee from, consume the stories floating my way from impossible pens, and wait for a better tomorrow. The right combination of words stitched together to save a destroyed world. Rescue me from myself. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Yeah, that great read there, Laurent. Just a beautiful emotive write by Ilex. I like his take on the prompt. I feel as empty as the space between two stars. And I think to me this is very relatable to anybody who has ever, like, had depression make them feel, like, hollow and empty inside. And I like this all the way through, but specifically speaks to me is, and no amount of words conjured by my own hands or by the tongue of a wiser fool could possibly supply the galaxy worth of mass required to satisfy the void spinning within my bones as the endless chill brings frost to my marrow. I like that he goes to the bones, to the marrow, the deepest part of self, that feeling of being destroyed from the inside. And it doesn't matter, like, to me, that part there kind of speaks on the whole idea, but it doesn't matter how many self-help books you read, you know, how many people out there have an opinion of what will help your particular case. it's a matter of people who think they have the answers for you when they don't know what you're going through. And just a really powerful imagery and very well done.
Great choice, Stephanie. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you? You got to read this.
Given the fact that he takes it out of the Chandler universe, puts it someplace different, I was trying to figure out exactly where this meta-human being could possibly be. I was literally thinking outer space, but of course it's the metaphor for that void within the mind, yet almost had me convinced otherwise. It would have been cute if it was indeed, but not. And, excuse me, and as in the last stanza says, and wait for a better tomorrow, the right combination of words stitched together to save a destroyed world, rescue me from myself, he being the destroyed world. But he could have easily tipped that just a little bit more and made a real science fiction story out of it, but didn't. And I like the context. I like the way he put it together.
Excellent, David. Thank you very much. There's some great guy to satisfy the void spinning with my bones as the endless chill brings frost my marrow, destroying me from within. So I cling to the plants between the chasm, savor the rare fistfuls of peace hanging between an unstoppable abyss and the mind I flee from. There's some dark, unrelenting pitfalls or hurt. And that opening thought, the kind of harmony found between two stars, it kind of gives you a thought that emptiness, an emptiness of the mind, so to speak, the two stars, maybe between the ears, a thought of a consumption from the inside out, where everything is a vein of hurt. Rescue me from myself. What is it that paints a really bleak existence in and of itself? Nicely done, Alex. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Back to you.
All right. Well, I wanted to let you know that Bobby has joined us. Welcome, Bobby. Glad you could join us.
Hi.
Hello,
thank
Bobby.
You. So, apologies. I lost track of time. I was writing and I forgot to look at the clock.
That's understandable. All right. Bobby, did you get to read that poem by Ilex?
I did not. I'm
okay.
Sorry, I missed it.
No problem. Just figured I'd check. All right. Up next, we have Mirror Image by Daniel Dischino. And Bobby, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. I'm glad to. All right. Let me tee this up here. Mirror Image. I exist at the bottom of an ocean of experience as a sea creature forgotten by the light. I have fleeting memories of the early days, soft open field, starshine on the flowers. Then the rains came, so cool and refreshing, but it never stopped. The clouds never parted. And now I wander under a vast reservoir collected from aqueducts of sight, touch, and sound. I try to drink of it, but there's just too much, and I am so filled, so heavy. I walk in slow motion from the weight of, or the weight within around. Yet the thirst never ceases as an emptiness. I feel a strange connection to the sunlight from long ago. So for the void I search, deep within the depths I am, deep above the depths that hold me, and mirrored reflections of emptiness do I find, atoms and nuclei, stars and planets, compounds and elements, nebulae and galaxies. And holding everything together, a vast emptiness. Mirror images, I am made in the likeness of the all. and poem.
Great read, Bobby. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
By all means, here's someone who has tasted and drunk so heavily of life that he has become filled with it. So heavy, I walk in slow motion from the weight within. Yet what he has done, what he has accomplished, what he has seen, somehow never fills the emptiness that is within him. And, you know, he feels a strange connection to the sunlight from long ago, which I would assume is youth. And all he finds are mirrored reflections of emptiness. And within that, atoms and nuclei, stars and planets, a whole galaxy. But the galaxy and everything else is held together by an emptiness, which is a mirror image of what is inside of him, I think. Pretty deep poem. Well done, I thought.
I like that. Thank you, Laurent. Elm, how about you?
Yeah, I really like what Laurent had to say. And a wonderful read there, Bobby. There's something like, I don't know, I think it definitely works very well to be taken on a personal level, like the idea of you know, looking back at one's youth. I also feel like there's kind of this idea of mankind's connection with the universe. I really like, and mirrored reflections of emptiness do I find, storms and nuclei, stars and planets, compounds and elements, nebulae and galaxies, and holding everything together, a vast emptiness. You know, to think that no matter what you believe, whether you believe in the Big Bang Theory or that a higher power created the world, and either one is fine, that it all started with a vast emptiness, and no matter what you believe. And that means that we have that connection to that emptiness. We have that connection to the universe. This is another poem. I always love Daniel's poetry. He just comes across as so intelligent, so almost like has almost a spiritual realm to it. This is one of those poems like Ilex's. I was thinking as this was being read about Lauren's comment and the idea that the nice thing about doing these kind of contests where you provide a quote, like 10 different quotes from a particular author, is people don't have to write in the style of the author. They can take the quotes themselves. And of course, you know, if you know the noir style of Raymond Chandler, authors like him, then it's great fun to write in that style. But it's also great fun, to just see what people get out of the quotes. And I really like how Daniel brings us from the mind and projects it outward into the universe. So very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Bobby, you got three. How about you?
Oh, my goodness. I read this before and was deeply impressed by this. This is an exquisitely written ethereal piece. It's a word painting of one's soul reflected in the cosmos. I feel strange connection to the sunlight from long ago, for so the void. I search deep within the depths I am, deep above the depths that hold me. Mirrored reflections of emptiness do I find, atoms and nuclei, stars and planets, compounds and elements, nebulae and galaxies. And the grand celestial reflection of the cosmos and the deep feelings of one's spirit and soul. I think this is a sublimely spiritual sequence that seeks to plumb the depths of one's mortality.
Well said, Bobby. Thank you very much. It's an almost careful note to the that thought, I exist at the bottom of an ocean experience, a singularity, watching the birth of everything from start, fleeting memories of the early days, soft open fields, stars shine on the flowers, the sight of us seeing something as it burgeons with life. Then the rains came, so cool, refreshing, but it never stopped, flooded with a sight, touch, and sound. Then taking it all in, but it's all too much to behold in itself. It's almost a note that it's a grand epic thought, but it's being done alone. Or the idea, it hits on the back end of this, it hits on, I feel a strange connection to the sunlight from long ago, so I go for the void I search, deep within the depths I am, deep above the depths that hold me. So there's an almost understanding, a touch of sadness in that, and then the search for that much more, the meaning of life itself, and the travel, only to find that in all things he finds himself. Kind of a nice spiritual journey, so to speak. Thank you very much, Daniel. All right, Pam, back to you.
Okie dokie, Smokey. And I'm going to toss it back to you with From a Distance by Paul Brott.
From a Distance by Paul Brott. From a distance, her eyes look blue and green, unlike those seen on her sight. From a distance, the ocean meets the stream, and the eagle takes flight. From a distance, she seemed like part of me, and it echoes through the land. It's the voice of hope. It's the voice of peace. It's the voice of every man. She got closer. I nearly woofed my lunch. The woman was in need. Held my composure. What was I after lunch? Having spied her on indeed. You know, I really must concede. Has she some sort of disease? I haven't got a hunch. Uh-oh, here it comes. My lunch. Keep your distance. And boom. And Paul took the... From 30 feet away, she looked like a lot of class. From 10 feet away, she looked like something made up to be seen from 30 feet away. And Pam, why don't we start with you?
All right. Well, I see this was a song parody or of a song by the same title, so that's cool. It's probably what gave it a nice flow. And the repetitiveness, of course, of From a Distance, gave it a good lyrical quality. I like that he went with this quote. I thought, if I had to have guessed what quote Paul Brott would have chosen, it would have been this one because he does great with humor. I really like how he builds it up where, like it says with the line, the voice of hope, it's the voice of peace, it's the voice of every man. She got closer, I nearly woofed my lunch. This woman was in need. And, to me, one of the best things about, twisted humor is that there you depend on exaggeration to make an impact. And that's what he does here. He really just, and I like that he brings it back around from at the beginning from a distance to keep your distance because I'm about to lose my lunch. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, apparently her picture on her site, a little different than real life. Initially, I think he likes what he sees. The voice of hope, the voice of peace, the voice of every man. And then, of course, as she got closer and closer, he began to revise his opinion, struggled with his composure, and finishing up with wondering if she had some kind of a disease, and my lunch may come back to visit, so keep your distance. It was a nice parody. It's funny. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Ron. And Bobby, how about you?
Wry wit. That's synonymous with Paul Brott. he had fun with this one, you can tell. And he brings us along with it. I mean, he took the very literal interpretation of the prompt, and he takes us from a vision of loveliness to a nightmare on Elm Street. He does it and he shifts gears so adroitly right in the middle of it. Great panache.
You're right. He did have way too much fun with this. And the only thought I can think of having a bit more fun is he realized that, hey, this is the 45-year-old man, full bearded, and he came just for you, which would have made it hilarious as hell. But as he wrote it this way, it does, from the start, it offers up that touch to hope. And like you said, right in the middle of it, oh, things make that very large U-turn, and it all comes crashing back down to that reality. Hey, you know what? Sights are sights. It doesn't mean they're honest up front. Even if you want to believe it so, things don't always work out the way you want. Well done, Paul. Thank you. And you're right. That was very wry and dry. Colored. Just right. All right, Pam. Where you want to go?
I swear that mouse in my room is getting way too brave. It just ran out and looked at me. Up next,
where's my cheese, Janet?
Exactly. That's probably what it's thinking. No, it's time to set out another peanut butter trap. So, but up next we have Welcome to My Lair by Crafty Mermaid. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Welcome to my lair. Relax. Nothing is a dare. I'm feeling crazy and ready to dance. I'll silence H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds and we'll tango as tripods spray blood up and down. Ever dance to spraying blood? It's all food coloring. Come on, the moon is full. It's All Hallows Eve, and I want you well. Bye. And poem.
Great read, Laurent. And the quote for that one was, I'm in a wild mood tonight. I want to go dance in the foam. I hear the banshees calling. All right, Bobby, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, this one tickled me. This is a really clever interpretation of the prompt. Welcome to my lair, relaxed. Nothing is a dare. I silence H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds and will tangle his tripods. the great, great irony here, great parody. Had fun with this. Ever danced to spraying blood. This is dark humor, but it's humor nonetheless.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. Pam?
Well, yeah, I have to agree with Bobby. This is definitely dark humor. But the first word, when I read this earlier and listened to it being read now, the first word that came to my mind is this is quirky. And quirky is not a bad thing, but it has a type of personality uniquely its own. Because it's dark. Like even the first line, you know, which is the title, Welcome to My Lair. You think at that point, your imagination just goes wild and what kind of darkness is going to happen. And then, you know, with the mention of the tripod and the ever dance to spraying blood, it's all food coloring. You know, I don't know. For me, this feels like somebody deciding that they're going to make a movie. And so that's the kind of vibe that I get it from it, especially within those lines. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. Laurent, how about you?
Well, I enjoyed this. But, you know, as good as it was, to me it was a little thin. I would have liked to have seen it about double the length based completely his inventiveness, and the way he was handling his images. I really liked it and thought it should have been longer for that reason.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Now that, where was it? Spray blood up and down, evidence to spraying blood. Actually, and it's all fruit color. That reminded me of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. When Arthur comes across the Black Knight and he chops off one arm and it's just, you're mortally wounded. No, I'm not. Come on. I still got one good arm. Chops that one off. Come on. I'll headbutt you. Chops off a leg. Chops off the other leg. Finally sitting on the ground. All four stumps bleeding. Come on. I'll bite you to death. That's kind of where I went deep into that with that thought with the spraying blood. And it's all food coloring. Kind of hinted that note too. And the fact that it's all Hallows Eve and I want you. There is that notation. Hey, you know what? Can we have a little nip here and there and some gameplay? Maybe we'll take it over the edge and I'll just suck you dry. All right, Pam, we're coming back to you.
All right. Great commenting tonight, everyone. And, all right, let me see what I have grabbed next. All right. Up next, we have A Killing Field of Reprimand by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. I can never beat myself at my own game, even with my gimpy knee, I'd step around the mines I'd set for you, but you know, they'd always detonate on only me. It begins as just a plan, you understand, and it fucking morphs into a trickery, a killing field of reprimand. I gotta be smarter than me. How the fuck can that even be? Ha ha. Hear me laugh? On your behalf, I bestow these words. I can never beat myself at my own game, and I have only my shitty self to blame. End poem.
Great read, Pam, and Julie took the prompt. There is no trap so deadly as the trap you set for yourself. And Laurent, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, the idea that you can't beat yourself at your own game. And it says, you know, you try to be too clever by half. And the minds that are set for you always detonate on me. And that's often the case in moments like that. I like the language in this. It is very sharp, very pointed. Killing a field of reprimand, I got to be smarter than me. Can you be smarter than yourself? There are a variety of ways, I suppose. It's interesting to theorize. I like the way she handled this. Very nice.
Thank you very much, Laurent. Bobby, how about you?
It reminds me, I believe the quote is from Confucius, seek revenge and you should dig two graves, one for yourself. And that's what it reminded me of, is this, there is no trap so deadly as the trap you set for yourself. When you seek to retribution, sometimes you're, as Laurent said, you're too clever by half. And you get ensnared in your own cleverness. And I think this says it. With a great deal, it's there's a lot of dark humor in here this evening, which is delightful, and this has got humor with a real sharp edge to it.
Thank you, Bobby, and you're right about that quote of dig two graves, one for yourself. That'd be a nice touch right there. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like what both Laurent and Bobby had to say, how they both noticed the kind of the philosophical angle to it, and they both noticed the sharp language. And I think that's a real gift of Julie's, is to be able to give us something to think about and use that raw, gritty, almost Bukowski-like style language. And, you know, I know I say this all the time, but I really like the way she knows what words to, you know, put all in capitals. And she doesn't do it all the time, but she's just a word here, like, you know, emphasizing you with the capital letters, you know, throwing in an F word here and there to really just emphasize. I also like the phrase, a killing field of reprimand, you know, because to me that speaks about setting, you know, obviously not a physical trap, but a trap with words. Like that whole idea of having to prove that you're right to the point where, you know, it becomes all about winning an argument, and, you know, just and setting that verbal trap for yourself. I really like this all the way through, but I like they'd always detonate on only me. It begins as just a plan, you understand, and it fucking morphs into trickery. Like the games just keep getting played, and nobody's willing to stop them. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. And I like the irony in this. It hints on what Bobby said, but plus also the thought of best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. You can plan for contingencies, but you never get to plan for them all because there's always that little quirk that you didn't attenuate yourself to, and all of a sudden it comes up, and before you know it, you're sitting in your own foibles, hoisted by your own petard, and like she says, I've only got my own shitty self to blame. Nicely done, Jules. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right. So I'm going to put Diane D. up next with her SoundCloud. Then I'm going to do Lawrence, Bobby, and myself. And then, of course, anybody, all the other rights that we have on the board. So, all right. And so up next, we have... Streetlight Golfing by Diane D, and we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Streetlight Golfing by Diane D. Underneath those streetlights, pebbles kicked, moss grows, deep green, grayscale tones. Pour some PSAT rain clouds. Busty, moldy chiffon ball gown flowing onto corkboard floors and pinned like a needle puff. She danced to a death C-sharp. Carbuncle eyes are gawking. She's a moving picture in ink. Shuffle left, shuffle right, step. It's not time for a curtain call. A mendacious moon follows the scent of air stinking pus, and it streams like bald stars dodging the red tip razor. Guileless, yes, but not hubristic. She whittles words from clay and steps into the streetlight. Can I have this dance, please? End poem.
Wonderful read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Bobby, why don't we start with you?
It's a very skilled use of language here. Diane has a wonderful command of the language and uses it quite adroitly. A mendacious moon, guileless, yes, but not hubristic. A lot of precision in the way she terms things. And this is almost a brevity. It is such an economical write. It's very, very dense, but very compact. The metaphors are done with such skill and precision. Musty, moldy chiffon ball gown flowing onto corkboard floors and pinned like a needle puff. She danced to a death C sharp. I see a combination of language of words here that are unique, but not they work. They're descriptive in a very singular way. I really like this piece. You can tell there's a lot of skill in the writing here.
Thank you very much, Bobby. All right, she stepped out in the streetlight, Laurent, and she's asking you for the dance. What do you think?
I see a person who does not engage in life, who's kind of stuck in the past, kind of an empty past, that where her mind is. The scenery is not what one might call pleasant. The use of words like puke green, pea sap rain clouds, fusty moldy chiffon ball gown, mendacious moon, air stinking pus, none of that is particularly pleasant. So I keep thinking of someone who's in this very strange world. And, you know, it's not out to fool anyone, but not particularly proud of herself either. But, you know, she does the best she can and occasionally steps into the streetlights. Can I have this dance, please? Asking really as an innocent in life, as someone who's really in control of everything. You know, the shuffle left, shuffle right step. It's not the end of the dance. She's still dancing it. It can be interpreted, I'm sure, in a variety of ways, but that's what I got out of it.
I like that. Thank you very much. And Pam, what about you?
Yeah, great observations. I really like the title and how she brings in the streetlights, because oftentimes in you know, ugly, dark parts of a city or town, it's the streetlights that see everything. Just wonderful visceral imagery. A great use on a technical level of some alliteration that's subtly thrown throughout. And I also like how she put in imagery that you wouldn't think. There was, when Lawrence was commenting, and I think it was Charles Dickens, there was a character who was known for sitting in her wedding dress on the steps of her house. You know, like that's all she wore, and I'm pretty sure it was a Charles Dickens story, but does anybody remember
Great
that?
Great Expectations.
Oh, thank you, Bobby. Okay, yeah, very cool, thank you. But yeah, that's what I began to think of, is that somebody who was once, you know, the belle of the ball, and in her mind, it actually also really made me think about homelessness and how so much of the homeless population are people who haven't been helped with their mental disorders such as bipolar or schizophrenia. It had a very kind of schizophrenia type feel to it. The whole idea of somebody lost in a world that really like nobody else sees. Everybody else sees this ugliness. Yeah. Well, thank you. But yeah, I really liked this. Absolutely a stunning write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I guess I have to walk off the cliff now, don't I? All right. I like that opening stanza. It sets the tone, the scene, and the bleakness therein. But that second stanza, fusty, moldy chiffon ball gown flowing on the corkboard floors and pinned like a needle puff, she danced to a deaf D sharp. Deaf D sharp. That is a sound that only she hears. And the carbuncle eyes, a nice touch there. Gawkers, those within the crowd or those on the dance floor itself. It's not time for a curtain call. Now that next one down, dodging the red tip razor, it had me thinking of this was someone who got murdered in a particular scene, whether it was a ballroom setting or theater setting. and she's been forever left in that realm and never grew out past that. That's where you get that guileless yes, but not hubristic down the bottom end. And can I have this dance, please? Still looking for that that one person to maybe help her out of the realm that she's been stuck into, ever dancing in that lonely place that was where she died. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right. Well said there, Rex. And Bobby, I've got your poem up. Go ahead. Give it a read for us, please.
Yes, ma'am. Oops, I got to shift gears here. Okay. I do apologize for the length. I got carried away. I had too much fun with, as you can see from the author's note, I selected prompts 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Sort of build a pastiche from there. So anyway, the title, Be Sure to Thank the Gods. From 30 feet away, she looked like a lot of class. It was my expectation that from 10 feet away, that classy look would transform itself into 20 miles of Death Valley fire trails. But it didn't. Oh, boy, it didn't. Up close, she looked even better, almost unreal. So drop-dead gorgeous that my brain wouldn't let my eyes stop drinking in the view. It was sort of like a train wreck, but in a good way. So as she made her way across the room with fluid feline grace, I kept searching for flaws. Gorgeous long hair, stunning face, and her figure, she was built like a brick schoolhouse. After surreptitiously studying her for an eternity, at long last I finally found a failing. Sort of. Those legs that went on for days, well, when they ended, they made a perfect ass out of themselves. I felt like I was playing it cool, being smooth. Well, I was about to have smooth redefined for me. As it happened, she had detected my stealthy scrutiny. When I looked up at her again, our eyes met and she smiled, mortified at being caught in the act of being in stealth mode. I sheepishly returned her smile and walked over to where she sat. Usually I don't give a damn what others think of my manners, but I apologize for being boorish and brought us around. That night was unusual in a lot of ways, me being out drinking for one. I'm an occasional drinker, a social gent who likes his vodka. I'm not the kind of guy who goes to the local pub for a short beer and wakes up in Singapore with a hangover and a beard. So now I find myself sitting across from this absolute goddess, beautiful, intelligent, engaging, who seems to genuinely be interested in me. It was last call, so I asked her if she wanted anything. She said yes. She gave me a look, leans in close to me, and whispers in my ear, I want to be a smile on your face that no one understands. Damn! I was in a wild mood that night, and I heard the banshees calling, so I thought, what the hell? This could be one of those nights I could reminisce over in my golden years during long winter evenings. So I invited her over to my place for a nightcap. Suave, right? We're barely inside the door. She drops her purse, kicks off her shoes, and lays a lip lock on me that knocks me completely off balance. I was to discover that this gal wasn't just talk. She was technique, too. That night, the earth moved, the angels wept, the banshees howled. We bounced off the walls. You could have scraped me up with a putty knife. At the end, I felt as hollow and as empty as the spaces between stars. I wanted to go dance on the foam, and we sure as hell did. The French have a phrase for the experience we shared that night. Those characters have a phrase for everything, and they're always right. The French call it La Petite Mort. And now I know why. Afterwards, I felt like death on toast. I was totally and wonderfully spent. Well, I don't care who you think you are, but I do know one thing. No one stays awake for long after an endorphin rush like that. We fell asleep against each other, and it felt so damn good. But after that deep sleep came the part I hated, the morning after. My head felt as though I'd spent the night with it in a waffle iron. I fully expected to wake up by myself, and I sure as hell wasn't wrong. I found myself in bed alone with my disappointment, hugging my pillow. Sitting up, looking around, I spotted something on the kitchen table. Shuffling over to it, I couldn't believe what I was looking at. There it was. Breakfast. Venti Starbucks and two chocolate croissants. And a note with a phone number and just two words. Call me. I glanced upward, and invoking the deities, I thanked them all. Whichever one of you did this, I owe you. Big time. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, no matter how skilled a craftsman is, and Bobby is certainly that, sometimes you're only as good as your tools and only as good as the materials you use. And by being able to use the prompts that she did, there's plenty of meat on the bones there to work with, plenty of good solid bricks to use as a foundation. And she built on them and delivered a very entertaining story in free verse. I enjoyed the piece quite a bit, regardless of length. It was well done, Bobby.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, too. Great read, Bobby. And I like that you wrote from the man's point of view. That very cool there. You know, that you tackled more than one prompt, I thought was great. And you did keep it entertaining from beginning to end. I liked the general theme of somebody who really isn't, he's not that bad boy, you know. He's not out looking for trouble, looking for dames. He goes out, he socializes, he has the occasional dream. But, you know, there's just that temptation, that call the wild, that, you know, wanting to sow those wild oats and, you know, just have that kind of fun. I liked when you mentioned, you know, about the idea of reminiscing in your golden years, because even though we don't realize at the time, oftentimes when we're young and, you know, we're just, you know, having the kind of fun we shouldn't be having, it's building those memories for when we calm down later in life. And, you know, the first person perspective, the first person narrative, of course, works really well with tonight's topic. I always feel any sort of like noir type write obviously should be done in the first person. I don't think it has to be, but you know, that just really adds to, for me, to the strength of the write. I like the use of the word serendipitously. After serendipitously studying her for an eternity, at long last, I finally found a failing sort of those legs that went on for days. Well, when they ended, they made a perfect ass out of themselves. Clever line. That is a very clever line and very well done.
Thank you.
All set, Pam. All right, Bobby. I like the twist they used in that first prompt you took. From 30 feet away, she looked like a lot of class. From 10 feet away, she looked made up to look like 30 feet away. But you wrote it hard, especially into the thought of that classy look would transform itself into 20 miles of Death Valley fire trails. And the surprise that it didn't actually work out that way, which was a nice touch of humor right there. and you hit in Fluid Grace, kept searching for floors. She was built like a brick schoolhouse. But then he dropped in another little a bit of funny. Those legs that went on for days, well, they ended. They made up a perfect ass out of themselves, which they made a perfect ass out of them, which was another nice touch. And what Pam said about playing it cool and realizing, you'd been caught in stealth mode, not a good look. But then you turn that right around again with the night was unusual in a lot of ways. Me out drinking for one. I'm an occasional drinker. Social agenda likes his vodka. I'm not the kind of guy who goes into a local pub for a short beer and wakes up in Singapore with a hangover to beer. Kind of a nice deft use of another prompt. Now, I did like the I want to be a smile on your face that no one understands. That was another use of the prompt, but you twisted it up a little. And instead of hip pocket, using that that no one understands was a real good touch. And the back end of this with the thought of waking up alone and waking up alone, there's a little bit of a disappointment in that, or maybe a lot of disappointment in that considering the night he had. But to wake up happy with coffee served and breakfast too, and a little note with two words, call me, and a number. Nice finishing touch, especially with the thought of, I owe you big time, thanking the gods for the, not just for the night, but the fact that she thought enough to let him call her again, as long as that actually is her number. And there's a twist at the end. Is it really a number that's hers, or is that just, hey, you know, maybe I'll see you, maybe not, the question. But then again, it fits the motif. Hey, you know what? He's smiling now until he dials that number. Will he be smiling then? Maybe an extra line of story. All right, Pam, we're coming back on you.
All right. Great comment, Rex. And Lauren, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a recess, please.
Let's see. I used the same prompt, number five, as some of the earlier ones. There's no trap so deadly as a trap you set for yourself. This is called Redhead in Distress. Her lips were full, a pair of blossoms from which there was no turning back. Red hair, green eyes, flashing fire, tall and lithe, a certain heart attack. Designer clothing by Yves Saint Laurent gave her presence an immaculate charm. Walking towards me with an open smile, hot enough to trigger a fire alarm. "Mr. Marlowe," she inquired huskily, "I've been told you're the right man to see. I really don't know where else to turn. Have you time for a new divorcee?" I was speechless, a goddess newly divorced. Who in their right mind wouldn't want her? I extended my hand. "Man, I'm your man." I was a cat, and I'd have let out a purr. "I've been robbed, swindled, money all gone. I married a man who proved false in the end. Our honeymoon was only 6 months ago. I'm not used to abandonment. I require a friend." Some mornings you roll out of bed, and you know something's not right. Much too much action the night before. Today I was primed and ready to fight. I escorted her to my two-tone Bel Air, took the lady out for a little ride. When I formulated my plan, someone had something to hide. No one leaves a woman like this, not for all the money in the world. Why abandon this honey when you have the money and as well the girl? Something's phony. I had better investigate, but in the meantime, I'll take her to dinner. Listen to her story, figure out the angles, suss out the issues, root out the sinner. Because I hate to lose, my friend. It's time for a fine old Bordeaux. This case intrigues, and I have a need for steak at the Charcoal Chateau. My favorite place to relax and unwind. I had a case to solve, a bad guy to find. If a trap existed, I had to spot the signs, solve the puzzle. read between the lines. This might be entrapment, as she snuggled up close. I'm a sucker for redheads. And that's how that goes. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Bobby, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, wonderful storytelling. Great from start to finish. I expected, I don't know, I guess I expected a spicier ending, but, you know, this has a to-be-continued type of ending, which is also wonderful because it lets you play, let your imagination play with what's going to happen. But the rhyme, it is so smooth. It is almost undetectable the way you've constructed it. Beautifully turn phrases. I also like that you inserted the Marlowe character, of course, Raymond Chandler's a signature character. The visual imagery, I escorted her to my two-tone Bel Air. Nice detail, very nice detail. Sets the time, sets the tone. Really enjoyed this from start to finish. I can't wait to find out how it ends.
Thank you.
Nicely said, Bobby. And Pam.
All right. Well, I do enjoy a well-told story and great rhyme. As I was saying earlier, when the rhyme fits in the story, it's not forced, it adds to the delight of the poem. What I really like here is this is a spot-on poem for tonight's topic. You can tell that you really had fun with this write. At least that's how it, you know, like I always feel like you can tell when somebody enjoys writing what they're writing. And I like that there's these little hints about how he's got that idea that he's getting himself in trouble, that he shouldn't necessarily be trusting this dame, but he can't help himself, you know, like as it says in the end, you know, I'm a sucker for redheads, and that's how that goes. I do feel like this is one of those rites that stands wonderfully on its own, but I wouldn't mind seeing some. I definitely would not complain if I saw more chapters develop in this. I really like there. Yeah, I was speechless. A goddess newly divorced. Who in their right mind wouldn't want her? I extend my hand, ma'am. I'm your man. If I was a cat, I'd have let out a purr. Just absolutely wonderful lines there, Laurent, and very well done.
Thank you, my dear.
All right, thank you, Pam. All right, I got to start out up top. Her lips were full, a pair of blossoms from which there was no turning back. I like the thought with that because you're offering up a dual thought with a pair of blossoms. It ain't just her lips you're looking at, but that's part of the package up front. Red hair, green eyes, flashing fire, tall and lithe, a certain heart attack, which already means you've been hooked, lined, and sinkered with this dish walking in the door. Now, the second stanza, designer clothing by Yves Saint Laurent. I love that fact because it reverts right back to you, which is a clever way of inserting yourself into this, even though you've got Mr. Marlowe. On the third stanza, she inquired huskily, I've been told you're the right man to see. I really don't know where else to turn. Have you time for a new divorcee? The thought that inquired huskily brings us right back to Bogey and McCall. Those nice touches that ring in memories of scenery that you can actually apply in the moment. And I agree with Bobby. That thought with the two-tone Bel Air was a nice touch. It doesn't allude to the years, but the only good two-tone Bel Airs that came out back in those days was a 56 or a 57. So there's some nice taste in the car itself. So That is also a nice, as Bobby said, a nice added detail. And then the thought of kind of entrapment. I've been robbed, swindled, money all gone. I'm not used to abandonment. I require a friend. Already, that's a question that kind of sits because you've separated that text out from the rest, giving an impression mentally that, yeah, something don't smell quite right. But you're still going in. Why? You're trying to figure it out. That's what all good private dicks do. They might get hornswoggled, but they try to actually make it work in both favors to the him and her in the long run. But you hit on the back end of this. Hey, you know what? All things being said, I'm screwed. That's the way it is, and that's my story.
Nice job.
Well,
thank you
very
much.
I enjoyed that. And Dan's right. There should be a bit more of this. Maybe some a little more play off the angle and have some fun with it. Does she kill him? Does she hang him out to dry? Does she rock his world?
Well, I just wanted to leave thought that, you know, he was setting a trap for himself by being
interested.
But that's exactly where I wanted to leave it. I didn't want to go further than that because then it leaves the prompt, you know, main center stage, so to speak.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. I like that.
Well, in that case, you can probably offer up a prequel that works in the same flavor.
It's so much easier to continue something at a future date than to have to finish it at the time.
Yeah, I know. You got to play off the right angles, then you got to keep going back to the original.
No, I mean,
I can't work this out because I already walked that route.
It took me 5 hours to edit this down to the point where I thought
it's not easy doing prequels. Well, as for a one-off, it'll stand in by itself, as it should. All right, Pam, where are we going next?
All right. Up next is My Right, and this is titled The First Meeting, and it goes like this. He stumbled into my office like a bastard-shaped hot air balloon in the Macy's parade. I have a case for you, he said, a case that needs a woman's touch. I leaned back in my chair, studying him across my desk. You should know I don't fuck to get information. That's not my style. I really don't care what your style is. Truth is, I hate working with women. But I have gone through 3 men. None of them could get me what I want. So here I am. In a douchery scale of 1 to 10, he had definitely just jumped to a 12. If I take your job, I'm going to expect 3 times what you offered the men and not in installments. The sign on your door says payment is negotiable. I don't negotiate with people who think hiring a woman is an act of desperation. He glared. If you don't want the job, I can leave and find someone else. That's fine, Mr. Thorpe, I said as he stood up. But tell me something before you leave. What's it like to be the black sheep in a family that's filthy rich and connected to crime? He sighed. I was hoping you wouldn't recognize me. I laughed. A beard and a hat doesn't cover the stench of a spoiled rich boy with a weakness for whores and hooch. Besides, gossip came way ahead of you and told me everything I needed to know. I stood up to look him in the eyes. Now you and I both know I'm the best person for this case, so bring me the paperwork I need and I can start solving your problems. He looked me up and down. You certainly have your attributes, but I thought your face would be prettier than it is. That's funny, Mr. Thorpe. I was just thinking the same thing about you. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, how about you? What do you think about this?
There's a lot of sword play in this. These two are fencing with each other, and they're not too kindly disposed, almost as if each resents the other. You know, there's a little bit of verbal one-upsmanship in several places throughout this. And, of course, just to demonstrate her knowledge of who he is. by asking him what's it like to be the black sheep in a family that's filthy rich and connected to crime. And, of course, that's the riposte to what he said about, I don't negotiate with people who think hiring a woman is an act of desperation. Now, she damn well knows that he knows that she's the best person for the job, but that's not going to stop him from one more insult. And, of course, she turns it right around on him. So I enjoyed the verbal fencing, and I enjoyed the piece.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Well said, Laurent. Thank you. I think Mr. Thorpe came into the office thinking he had bigger balls and knew what he wanted. But I think now he's holding his own dick in his hands.
And he's got small hands.
He stumbled into my office like a bastard-shaped hot balloon in the Macy's parade. I have a case for you, a case you need the woman's touch. And then he holds it, hey, I don't like women. I don't like working with them. Yeah, no. The douchey scale of 1 to 10, he jumped to a 12. Oh, well, you might as well ask him about 3 times as much. He's got nowhere else left to go. So he's going to have to pay
right.
up one more. And all the black sheep, the filthy rich, you got him down to this spoiled rich boy. That's what he wants. I mean, but there's I stood up looking in the eyes. Now, you and I both know the best person for this case for bringing the paperwork I need, and I can start solving your problem. There's almost a quiet note to now you're the cup, and everything's being done on my terms. If you want something to happen, give me what I want, and I'll take care of business for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you, Rex. I actually did make sure to Google what year the Macy's Parade came out just to make sure it kind of fit into the timeline that I was wanting. And the only detail I couldn't decide on was I was going to have him wear a specific style of hat, you know, like from the 1930s or 40s. But I just couldn't decide which one I wanted to go with. Not that that's just a small detail, but yeah.
Oh. You had the standard fedora. You had the bowler that Oliver Hardy always wore. There are a few hats to play on.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I may go back and add that in later just because sometimes little details make a difference.
All right.
Up next, we have Unsatiated by Forgotten Dream. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Unsatiated by Forgotten Dream. I kissed you, lips licking salt and a sweetness that swirls in saliva. Scuffed boots turning, walking, splintering steps. Goodbye. Sitting on worn airplane seats, cutting through miles, eyes gazing above, horizon, cloud, earth. You are as distant as those stars, once the blazing fixed point in my world, but now I shiver in the cold blue light. Stagnant air suspends motion. Hours, perhaps years, crawl by my face, grasping for meaning like parched mouths seeking water. I'm left dehydrated. Midnight pours into the cracks, filling the spaces between red old galaxies burst in darkness. And still, I'm vacant. I'm calm. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Well, I thought, first of all, great read there, Rex. Just a write that's a wonderful combination of you know, like sensual romantic and yet the sadness there, you know, the mention of the airplane seat, you know, it kind of like makes me think of the idea of a long distance relationship, sitting on worn airplane seats, cutting through miles, eyes gazing above horizons, clouds, earth. You're as distant as those stars. You can really feel the yearning for the other person, the sadness, the emptiness. I like the how she used the space between ribs. Midnight pours into the cracks, filling the spaces between ribs, whole galaxies birthed in darkness and still time vacant. It's the whole idea of no matter what else is going on that could make your life complete, it's not, because you're missing that one person that fills the space between ribs, that touches your heart. So beautifully written and very well done.
Pam and Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, one moment you're in the arms of your beloved. The next moment you're 30,000 feet in the air, looking down on a small earth, and she is as distant as the stars above. When you jump on an airplane, there's a real discontinuity because you're really in an alien space. Alien environment. Yeah, people fly all the time, but I mean, I don't think I've flown myself more than, I don't know, 6 or 7 times in my life, maybe 8. But each time is special because it's such a different way of traveling than simply walking or driving. And when you're that close to the cosmos, your thoughts tend to, I think, include it. And it did very well. When she said, you're as distant as those stars, once a blazing fixed point in my world, but now I shiver in the cold blue light. Well done.
Thank you very much, Laurent. Yeah, the opening couple, two stanzas kind of hit on that note of saying goodbye, but that middle one, you are as distant as those stars, once a blazing fixed point in my world, but now I shiver in the cold blue light. There's a... almost a turning point, almost that cold blue light offers up a thought to finality, because from there on down, Clark's mouth seeking water, I'm left dehydrated, midnight pours in its cracks, filling space between ribs. There is that note of knowing that it's over in the moment, because that last line, whole galaxy's birth in darkness, I'm vacant. There's a note of that distance isn't just between the fact that one is on the plane, one's on the ground. That distance is a notation that something occurred that now separates them, not just in miles, but in vast oceans of space. Nicely done, Forgotten. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right. Up next, we have The Center by Kenny W. And Lauren, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I will. The Center. Throws up all his thoughts each morning, reams and reams of sick ideas spewing from his typewriter for the semi-sobered up midday Center to rearrange the deranged from technical yawns and squalid dreams, to plan schemes of the cheated, beaten, and darlings sent to haunt him, sent to taunt him, sent to daunt him, and torture him whole. The poor writer, detective soul, unable to tell fact from fiction, knowing no longer what's true or false, just a rundown cat for a friend, though he's out all night as well. Not at the bars and cafes like his master. He's out for food and much craftier, looking for the feline Lauren Bacall, the collective be and end all. And when he finds her, he won't be back to this beaten-up one-room flat where the writer writes his lonely prose. It's afternoon now, and who knows if the broad set opposite the desk is speaking the truth, and yet she's dragging on a Camel cigarette, telling him stories they'll regret, saying, "Mister, I need your help. Just you, not nobody else." And the Center blinks into his glass as she leaves, sizing up her ass, thinking she could be played by Kate Blanchett, because that also rhymes with cigarette. Types that one out with no regrets. More pages. It pulled from the typewriter. Need to get more facts. Make the story tighter. But it's whiskey 0 o'clock in the afternoon. He's going out again pretty much soon. He takes his gun, but doesn't know what for. Leaves his trilby hat hanging on the door. The cat follows him out with nice cleaned-up paws. The bar is only 2 blocks away. It doesn't look like rain today. The censor looks up to the sky, looks for Lauren and Kate, but he doesn't know why. They said a long goodbye. End quote.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Ken took the quote, throw up into your typewriter every morning, clean up every noon. All right, Pam, what you got?
I really enjoyed this one. I like how he brings us into the scene, and you know we've got the writer, and he even works the cat in there. I had to smile at when he wrote about the cat with just a rundown cat for friend, though he's out all night as well, but not at the bars and cafes like his master. He's out for food and much craftier, looking for the feline Lauren Bacall. I thought that was really great to bring Lauren Bacall in. And I like how he wrote this all in one big stanza, almost like there was a hurried feel to it. Like you could just feel the author trying to meet their deadline. I'm not 100% sure what a censor is, so I'm guessing it's somebody like an editor. You know, somebody who says you've got to meet your deadline. Really just clever lines all the way through. I really like, but it's whiskey o'clock in the afternoon, be going out again pretty much soon. He takes his gun, but doesn't know what for, you know. And he chose a specific kind of hat. So that was cool, a trilby hat. I like that. So very cool and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, how about you? You got to read it. But you got to unmute first.
You are absolutely correct. Thank you for that. A writer's life can be a lonely life. I mean, writing is a lonely exercise. You're ignoring everything and everyone. The exclusion of what's in your mind's eye and in your head. I mean, you may stop to do research occasionally, but a good writer, write and write and write. So you sometimes do end up living a single life, a solitary life, because you really have time for nothing else. But I like the way the author calls him a censor. Because he's censoring himself, I guess, in many ways. When he writes, I can write this, I can't write that. This doesn't work, this does work. A lot of self-critique, a lot of self-criticism. As for the cat who's a friend, I mean, they're both going out for the same thing, right? He's out for food, but not necessarily just food. The cat's going out for the equivalent, and who knows what they'll find first. It's a kind of a sobering piece because there's not a lot of joy in it. It's really grim, but it's matter of fact, and it's got some nice flow that kind of pulls you along from scene to scene, from image to image. The fact that he takes his gun is a little worrying. It's almost like a sentiment of doom. You know, is suicide there? Is he going to hold someone up? Is it there for protection? Well, given his state of mind, he doesn't sound too happy. It's the format in this is kind of unique, kind of different. He doesn't strive too hard for metaphors, but he's using contrasts that work really, really well. All through this, I definitely like this piece.
I do too, and you're right. The thought I was what I was getting into was Raymond Chandler meets Bukowski and Mickey Spillane from the 1980s Mike Hammer, and this is what you get: a little bit of each of them. Because the cat hasn't had me thinking of Bukowski.
the modern day thought had me thinking of Mike Hammer from the 80s, and he still pops in the thoughts of Lauren Bacall, and then goes a little further with dropping in Kate Blanchett, and hits on that note here with the quote he took, throws up all his thoughts each morning, swinging from his typewriter, but his semi-sobered up midday Spencer. The midday Spencer would be him sobered up enough to realize, yeah, now I've got to clean up the mess I created of this page, of this story. But the back end, like you said, the thought would be leaving his trilby on the door and walks out the street with his gun, offers up a motif that's a little different. Maybe it's intentional. Maybe it's just the fact that it's a nice day. It doesn't look like rain. But then again, there he is. The Spencer himself looks up to the sky, looks for Lauren and Kate, but he doesn't know why they said a long goodbye, a long goodbye being one of Chandler's books. So there is a note to finality drawn in that last line as well. So I like the storyline he threw out with this, and it plays well. Nicely done, Kenny. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right. Great comment there, Rex. And up next, we have Cocktails Be Hanged by Pink Fairy 5, and it goes like this. Cocktails be hanged. I need something more substantial. I stroke the pipe of Crazy Town, loving her exotic tune. My feet dance up and down the doorway. I snag a new friend. He tries to escape, but I am fearless and determined. His girlfriend tries to disengage us, but I hold on tight. My chiffon is showing, and sequins and pearls will follow. I am a drag queen on speed, crying my willpower. A crow falls down dead in the forest, recognizing me. We dance to the moon and back, and I never let go. He is winded and breathless, just like I like my men. A coroner comes right away to pick him up. It is my pattern. I dance the hell out of all these old codgers when I am in this mood. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Pink took the quote, when I'm in a wild mood tonight, I want to go dance in the foam. I hear the banshees calling. All right, Laurent, why don't you start this off?
Good Lord. This is this paints a picture to me of an older woman, perhaps, who, when she needs to feel something a little more substantial in life that she is leading, she's all too willing to let it all hang out. That means going to a dance or going to almost anywhere and snagging a new friend. But no, she's not going to let him go, despite the fact that the girlfriend tries to pull him away. She's going to use that man for her own advantages. I'm a drag queen on speed. Crying my wolf howl speaks to the emotions of the moment. A crow falls down dead in the forest, recognized me, made me laugh. Because poor crying to be very shocked by what he saw. She dances to the moon and back. Again, the emotion of the moment, the fury that's in her soul, the need for the whole thing. And leaving whoever she had breathless, just like I like my men. And again, I had to laugh in the corner, came right away to pick him up. She leaves a long line of bodies behind her, I think, and uses up all those old codgers. I really enjoyed this. It had a sense of humor and a skill that was excellent and a very short piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Pam, you were giggling. What you got?
Oh, my gosh. Now, this is just funny. I really like that it's Pink Fairy 5, the usual kind of brevity that she does. And she always puts a lot of meat on the bones, even in shorter writes. But she really just kept the punches coming. I mean, the whole crazy language of this. I need something more substantial. I stroke the pipe of Crazy Town. loving her exotic tune. And my chiffon is showing and sequins and pearls will follow. I'm a drag queen on speed, crying my wolf howl. I mean, you can just totally imagine this older gent's girlfriend trying to get him from the claws of a drag queen who just wants to dance all night. And, you know, I like how it's wonderful dark humor, you know, and just, it, I don't know, it just, yeah, it made me laugh. It did. There was so much in just, you could imagine the scene going on and just laugh at that. So very well done.
Great comments, you too. I was drawn to that second stanza, that third line. I'm a drag queen on speed, crying my wolf howl. There is a note of literality to that because of all the things she's got lined up in here. The winded and breathless, just like I like my men. Coroner comes right away. So there's almost a deliberate note to scaring the hell out of old codgers when they realize they're doing it with a drag queen in the moment, despite what the girlfriend are trying to draw them away from, and they all end up dead. So it's got a nice twisted flavor and a lot of humor in it because it was funny all the way through.
It
right,
truly
Cam.
Was. All right.
Yeah, I think,
up
that,
next
I think that's the best piece I've seen from Pink so far. That was definitely funny.
That was great. I really did enjoy that one. Excellent comment, Rex. All right, up next we have A Nice Bagatelle by Jack Blue. And Rex, will you read that for us, please?
A Nice Bagatelle by Jack Blue. Some fatal vacuum or a blank infinity covers all my universe as if by sorcery when I drift or linger between two polar grails beckoning me to surrender to their sparkle of truth. Should I live a fantasy or juggle with realities to love the cradle of my soul, joyfully and childishly with my Hamlet honoring my fairy's continuity, or to accept the theorem of tomorrow's tonightness, in search of some eternity around my noble sword, fading out to be a purple flame of peace. Let my bagatelle be a bluish bell murmuring alone by the empty throne. And poem. All right, Pam, what you got?
I like this. He had another poem that he wrote for one of my contests where he used the word bagatelle, which I, of course, had to look up. And it's a type of a song or type of music was one of the that it gave. Like the imagery in and the idea of the questions asked. Should I live a fantasy or juggle with realities to love the cradle of my soul joyfully and childishly with my Hamlet honoring my fairies continually on to or to accept the theorem of tomorrow's fitness, but I like that whole entire, I mean, I like the whole poem, but that second stanza really stands out to me in the idea of, can I find a balance between fantasy and reality? Can I be that noble sword, that representation of all that is magical, or do I have to lean completely on science and all its theories? I like the alliteration too, and let my bagatelle be a bluish bell, you know, wonderful lines all the way through and beautifully written and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you? Laurent, you see you on the morphology again?
Well, I mean, mute is a disease. Once an issue, you have to repeat it over and over again at the moment.
Yeah, you should have heard Jean the other night. She started off the evening right that way. It just didn't go very well all night long.
Well, I remember.
Oh.
Yeah, he begins with the question of the possibilities of him surrendering to two polar grails. And I guess he's referring to a vacuum or a blank infinity. So it doesn't seem, I'm a little uncertain as to what the truth is within that. Should I leave a fantasy or juggle the realities? He has, I assume, being a knight, his noble sword. And should he be ready to use it at a moment's notice, the theorem of tomorrow's fitness, or should he live in a fantasy where softer, nicer things happen? Now, the definition of bagatelle, the way I understand it, is that it's the billiards derived game, and it's referred to as a game. It can also be referred to as a light piece of music. That's true, but I don't think, I don't know if he's using it that way, because he says, be a bluish bell, a bell would ring, analogous to a song, so that kind of works with the light and airy, but it also refers to the game itself, which is being played, and the empty throne. One wonders whether or not he is abdicating his position as a knight, maybe of a manor, maybe as a throne, who knows. But there's a lot going on in this particular piece that I really like.
Excellent, and you're on the right track. I think the bagatelle in this use, there is another meaning, something of little significance. And I think the note with that is the fact that he is a knight, and the choice between doing what knights do, which is fight and honoring up their code, so to speak, or be blissful in the knowledge. If he hits on around this thought right here, around my noble sword, fading out to be a purple flame of peace, and let my bagatelle be a bluish bell murmuring alone by an empty throne, which offers up that final decision. He'd rather have his sword as an insignificant thought to the battle itself, if it relegates the propensity for peace throughout the kingdom. So you were definitely on the right track, Laurent. All right, Pam. What's up?
All right. Our last poem for the night is Beautiful You Are. Let me see if I'm reading that right. Let me click on it. Okay, Beautiful You Are, I Empty Soul Lost in the Sky by Kasia F. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. I met you. First time in my eyes saw yours, I was lost. An empty soul in grief. You were right next to me. You called me a chatterbox, my nickname from now on. Yes, maybe I say too much, just feeling flowing without a touch. Your beautiful face, your being. Maybe I wish to feel love, but you left, bringing nothing from me. Of course I feel empty. I wish for someone to care, without a word. Actions always be gladder. You just know when the one comes along. His heart sings a beautiful song. In the sorrow of days past, my heart and soul was lost. To lose someone so close, it's like a knife in your own core. In need of someone who knows how to love. Soothing the bruised soul. Words like a weak branch about to fall. I found you beautiful. It does not matter. Your heart and soul chose a different road. It would have been heavenly to feel your embrace, but you were somewhere else. I don't ever want to expect your soul to love me, your eyes to spark as you look at me. Maybe I'm faded, empty, scared, and deprived of a gentle touch. Free will. To look into another's eyes and see the butterflies, the moment of birth. Yet the soul is a thorn. Sometimes we miss the smile, the love that stands behind. It was so wonderful to know you, just for a brief moment in time, Nothing ever lasts for long unless your own heart knows it belongs. Some crazy artist I am in search for something I will never find. You know, touch, kiss. Seeing your muse to embrace as love flows from the heart. So I will know, without a doubt, you are true through your eyes and heart. I hold love deep as fire that burns deep within. All I want is same thing. Yes, you are beautiful. Oh, love, so true that the empty soul just shines through. Empty poem. Empty poem. End of poem.
Great reading. Oh, thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I really liked this one. It's so emotive. I like how it's the reminiscent back into a time when two people met, and then how life takes different directions. In the sorrow of days past, my heart and soul was lost. To lose someone so close, it's like a knife in your own core. And but the end, you know, the end makes me think. It says, yes, you're beautiful, oh, love, so true that the empty soul just shines through. There's parts of this in the end and another part that makes me think that after that other person went on, there was the idea of wouldn't it be nice to heal? Wouldn't it be nice to experience love again, even if it wasn't, you know, in the same form, even if it wasn't with the same person? You know, just stunning imagery and metaphors all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, you got to read this. How about you?
Yeah, I met you first time my eyes saw yours, I was lost. But I get the impression that ultimately, even though he misses her desperately, your beautiful face, your being, He then says, I wish for someone to care without a word. The one comes along. Yes, I found you beautiful. It does matter. It does not matter. Your heart and soul chose different roads. But it seems to me that what's important is to have someone, regardless of who, that would care for him and that he could love. I don't know if that isn't just because of the translation from the original language, perhaps, or English is not primary, although he writes wonderfully in it. There are just certain little things. I hold love deep as fire that burns deep within. All I want is the same thing. He wants that love. He returns to her again. Yes, you are beautiful. Oh, love. Now, he's referring to love there, I think, not necessarily to another person. So I think it's the love that is center for him, and it doesn't necessarily have to come from the same source as it did. It's you want to use the word emotive, this is a motive. This is someone who is speaking really from the heart deeply, and it's a great piece.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that, Laurent. There is a kind of a note to that very, very first love that sticks like glue to your heart and your mind. And that search to find that once more can be long and enduring and painful, which is kind of what a lot that sits in here. In the sorrow of days past, my heart and soul was lost to lose someone so close. It's like a knife in your own core in need of someone who knows how to love, soothing the bruise. And that offering of to find that perfectness once again, and then offers up that thought to the muse, the painter, the crazy artist, seeing your muse to embrace as love flows from the heart, so I will know without a doubt you are true through your eyes and heart. That careful notion of seeing into one's eyes and knowing the depth of their soul and the true feeling that comes through it. It's nicely done. Thank you very much, Garcia. All right, Pam.
All right, well, great show tonight, Rex. Thank you to Lauren and Bobby for being here. Awesome lineup of poetry. And we'll do this again next week, right? I imagine.
Well, I think you just closed out the evening. Those are my lines.
I'm sorry. No. You close out the evening. That's your job.
It's a little late. You've already taken my line, so I will say. Laurent, Bobby, thank you very much for stopping in and helping out. And yes, we shall do this again next week.
Good night, you too.
Good night, everybody.
All right. Good night, Rex.
Good night.